Hey, this is Nathan Motes, and you're listening to the Sell Us Out podcast.
Simos, bending one for Torres. Eusebio. Oh, my word! Have you ever seen anything like that?
É jogado por Simão. A passar por dois adversários, Simão. A tentar oferecer o gol a Figo. E...
And after 294 days, the Slesson took the field again. From the Slesson Podcast Studios, we welcome you to episode number 33 of the Slesson Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to, a Slesson Podcast about the Slesson. What a weird concept that we have been without for the better part of almost 10 months, but the team is back. The Slesson is back. Nations League group play is what awaits the Slesson this coming weekend with two matches, one in Portugal against Croatia, the other one 3 days later in Sweden as they take on the Swedish. But the important thing is that the Slesson is back. We get back to watching our national team play. And I know everyone who is listening to this episode and been listening to the episodes from the very beginning of the pod is grateful and thankful that we have our Slesson back on the field. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host of the Slesson Podcast. And, of course, we want to always thank you for your support. Obviously, the last few months, we've taken a different direction with the pod, focusing on Portuguese soccer in terms of the league and players. We had our COVID episode back in the end of March, early April, where we just didn't know what was happening with soccer in general, with the world in general, really. But some normalcy after the leagues came back, and now with the Slesson back in action this coming weekend, a little bit more of normalcy is here, and we're very grateful for that as well. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at SlessonPod. SlessonPod.com is the website. Facebook.com/SlessonPod is the Facebook page. You can email us, SlessonPod@gmail.com. You can go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on many, many platforms, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Play. Just make sure that you hit the subscribe button so you can never miss an episode, and go ahead and leave us a nice review or a 5-star rating if you're on the Apple Podcast. If you are so nice to do so, we would greatly appreciate it. But we're just so happy again that we are back talking about the Slesson. Coming up on today's episode, we will have Slesson correspondent for Portugal.net, Nathan Motes, as we will review the roster that Fernand Sanc has called up for the Nations League group matches between Croatia or against Croatia and against Sweden. We'll also take a look at get some of your questions that we got from our Twitter and just be able to talk again. I'm a little giddy if you guys can't tell. We've been waiting for Portugal to get back on the field. And I can't believe that we're just a handful of days away from that, but we will definitely get Nathan's thoughts on everything Slesson, and we look forward to that in just a few moments. But I just wanted to kind of give a bit of a rundown of what has happened with the Slesson since this pandemic break occurred in mid-March. Obviously, Euro 2020, that got postponed. Those matches have been moved to the summer of 2021. Those dates for the Euro 2020, and I don't know what they're going to call it, if they're going to call it Euro 2020 or Euro 2021. But the dates that were supposed to be this summer have been moved to next summer, June 15th. We still don't know who the playoff winner opponent will be, but that's who the Slesan will open up against on June 15th. On June the 19th of 2021, the Slesan will take on Germany. And on June the 23rd, the Slesan will finish out group play against France. There were friendlies that were scheduled in 2020. There was a small tournament that was scheduled in at the end of March of 2020, the Qatar or Qatar Airways International Tournament in Doha. On March the 27th, the Slesan was supposed to take on Belgium. And then 3 days later, on March the 30th, they were supposed to take on Croatia. Switzerland was the other team in this four-team friendly tournament. We also had friendlies that were canceled at the end of May. May the 31st, the Slesan was supposed to take on Slovenia. On June the 5th, they were supposed to take on Spain. And on June the 9th, prior to the previously scheduled Euro 2020, they were supposed to finish out their last friendly against Malta. But again, everything with this pandemic got pushed, postponed, or canceled. And as of right now, what the schedule looks like for the Slesan for the rest of 2020, and it's a busy finish to the year, is as follows. Right now, Nations League, the defending champs of the inaugural Nations League, the second going here, the Slesan will open up on September the 5th, which is this Saturday, against Croatia. At Sweden, 3 days later on September the 9th. The following month in October, the Slesan will have three matches, two matches in the Nations League and one friendly. They start with the friendly first. They had the friendly against Spain on June the 5th rescheduled to October the 7th. That game in Portugal. They then go to France to take on the defending World Cup champions on October the 11th. They then come back home to Portugal to take on Sweden on October the 14th. And then three more matches in November, a friendly at home in Portugal against Andorra. They then host France on November the 14th. That friendly against Andorra is on November the 11th. France at home November the 14th. And then they go to Croatia on November the 17th. So eight matches in roughly 2.5 months for the Slesan. So they're definitely making up for lost time. A very, very tough group in the Nations League, that's for sure, where France is currently ranked second, Croatia sixth, the Slesan is seventh, and then Sweden is 17th. But, you know, we'll worry about, you know, qualifying for the knockout phases of the Nations League later on this calendar year. But just wanted to give you guys a heads up on the schedule for the rest of this season or the rest of this calendar year. Excuse me, as eight matches, 2.5 months. That's a lot of football on top of club play, on top of European club football as well. A very exciting end to 2020, that is for sure. As for the roster for these upcoming Nations League matches, Fnansunch announced those last week. The roster is as follows. It's a 25-man roster for the Nations League. Normally in the European European qualifying, it was 23, so they get two extra roster spots here. The goalkeepers, Rui Patricio, Anthony Lopes, and Rui Silva. Obviously, the news there is the return of Anthony Lopes to Slesan football after a numerous year absence from the national team. Very happy to see that he is back in the good graces of the Slesan. Not that he was out of the good graces, but I know that he wanted to focus on club football for a while. But he finished up a great campaign, Champions League wise, with Lyon, and happy that we have a solid backup now for Rui Patrice. On defense, Pep, José Font, Rafael Guerreiro, Ruben Dias, João Cancelo, Nelson Semedo, Mario Rui, and Domingos Duarte. Those are your defenders. João Moutinho, Danilo Pereira, André Gomes, Bruno Fernandes, Renato Santos, Ruben Neves, and Sergio Oliveira are your midfielders. And then Bernard Silva, André Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, João Félix, Diogo Jota, Francisco Trincão and the captain of all captains, Cristiano Ronaldo, are your forwards and wingers. I would say this is a pretty solid group of 25 here. Not a lot of changes on the defense there. I know Ricard Pereira is still out with the ACL injury. He's recovering, and from everything I've read and everything I understand from reports out there is that his recovery is coming along nicely. William Carvalho still out with the back injury. Never really got probably maybe not out with the back injury, but just not fully in form yet. Due to the back injury, he just has not had a great end of 2019, early 2020, and that unfortunately has cost him a spot this go around in the roster for the September games or the September matches of the Nations League. In terms of the forwards, obviously the names that pop out are the number one, I think, is the newsmaker is Francisco Trincão getting his first call up to the senior squad. Going back to the goalkeepers, Rui Silva of Granada also getting his first call up. But the young 20-year-old who will be 21 at the end of this year, Francisco Trincão, obviously his first season upcoming with Barcelona after the big deal, the big move from Braga. Not sure how much playing time, if any, he'll probably get. But just exciting to see another young player coming to the senior team. Obviously, João Félix made his debut last year. Has not gone great for João Félix on both the senior side for the Seleção or his first season with Atletico. But still, he too just 20 years of age, be 21 in November. And again, you have the emergence of André Silva, who after the pandemic. The COVID break, scored with reckless abandon for Frankfurt in the Bundesliga. Just had himself another goal this past weekend in club action for the German club. So he could be a nice pair to put with Ronaldo. You have Diogo Jota as Wolverhampton finished off another very positive season in the Premier League and had a nice run with Europa League as well. So there's plenty of options to play up front with Cristiano Ronaldo. The midfield to me is it gets to a point where you have your top four there with Moutinho, Bruno Fernandes, Ruben Neves, and Daniel Pereira, and then you have your second four of André Gomes, Renato Sanches, Sergio Oliveira. Or check that your second three, and you know that there are those four guys that I mentioned, those first four: Moutinho, Fernandes, Neves, and Daniel Pereira. Those are guys that have put in match after match for Fernandes Sanches in the last few years. There's some inexperience and just not consistent play out of Renato Sanches, André Gomes, and Sergio Oliveira. The argument could be made that if William was healthy, obviously André Gomes or Sergio Oliveira probably would be one of the two men out. Renato Sanches had a very nice second part of his year at Lille before the pandemic canceled the rest of the French league season. There's a name like Beasy who put up great numbers for this less or for Benfica and in Liga NOS, now Liga Portugal, who could have taken André Gomes or Sergio Oliveira's spot, but he is not on this roster. But I would say from top to bottom, this is a solid roster, and definitely a lot of options for Fernandes Sanches to put against Croatia, to put against Sweden, and there should be every expectation based on this roster on paper. That the Seleção should have every expectation of getting 6 points, at least putting themselves in a position to get 6 points to start off this group strong, like they did in the Nations League last year, or the last rendition where they won their first two matches and for all intents and purposes, pretty much won the group with about two matches left. It was a three-team group They beat Italy. They beat Poland. They were atop the group with 6 points and only needed to get some sort of result in the last two matches to win the group. Obviously, it's a very, very tough task this go-around with France, with Croatia, the World Cup champions and the runners-up of the last World Cup in 2018, and Sweden, even though the history is a most recently a positive one against the Swedish, they're still a very, very formidable team. But so is Portugal, so is the Slesson. They're ranked seventh, and they're ranked seventh for a reason. And I think that this group of players will do a wonderful job for Ferdinand Sanch. And to me, the most important thing is for them to put themselves in a very, very good situation, in very good position, when the October match, the October 11th match on the road at France comes, so that they can put themselves in a good position the rest of the way. It's a tough group, no doubt about it. But again, excited that the Slesson was back, but you got to get past the excitement as soon as that ball is kicked off against Croatia, and the expectation and the results need to come for the Slesson, and here's hoping that they do. So that is a look at the roster and a look at the schedule for the rest of this calendar year 2020 for the Slesson. Again, so happy that they are back. But let's now get to our interview with Nathan Motes of Portugal.net as he and I discuss the return of our beloved Slesson right here on episode 33 of the Slesson podcast. So with the Slesson back in action and getting us back to talk about the Slesson in episode number 33, of the Slesson podcast is Slesson correspondent for Portugal.net, our good friend Nathan Motes. Nathan, welcome back to the show, my man.
Hey, you know, it's been long enough, and we were just talking about it before we started here. I wasn't sure if we were ever going to play again, but it's nice to talk about it now that we are.
It'll be 294 days since the Slesson clinched their berth to Euro 2020 in November. November the 17th, and coming up in the next about less than a week here on September the 5th, 294 days, Nathan. I would agree with you. I think it's been long enough, but we're definitely happy to have them back in our good graces and to be on our television sets and get some normalcy back in the football world. We've had all the leagues come back for the most part. I know leagues are starting up again in the next week or so, but to get international football back and to get our Slesson back, that's they're a sight for sore eyes, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that what we forget about in these times is just how, you know, much a sport like football enriches our lives. You know, I actually wrote about that months ago now, just the extent to which football, you know, means something to us as humans. You know, it's just a sport, it's a game. It's a child's game at that, frankly. You know, children playing in the streets, and yet it means something so much more than that. And we only kind of realize that once we can't have it in our lives anymore.
You know, obviously the elephant in the room is how the pandemic has impacted the world of football and the way in which you watch. But we talked about it a little bit prior to having you on. You're set in Louisiana. You live in Louisiana, and Hurricane Laura went through the state and the Gulf region this past week. Obviously, we're very happy to hear from you and that you're safe. But to give those who may not be aware of just another thing that people have to deal with in this crazy 2020, how has the region or how is the region doing, and what kind of update can you give us on that?
Yeah, well, it was my first ever experience being in a hurricane, and luckily I experienced it from a corner of the state that was a little further away from the coast. But you know, I can say that it's rattled everyone here, and this has already been a difficult year for people in this state, as it is for people all over. And I'll just say that you know, we have property in this state, and we have a lot of friends of property that are just waiting to hear anxiously about whether or not their belongings, their own survived. And, you know, it's just one more thing this year. It just, you know, it beggars description, you know, see the kind of events happen. You can't control it. You just have to accept the outcome. And that's kind of how we're all feeling right now.
Well, our thoughts and prayers are with everyone in the Gulf region of the United States. And hopefully it's as the news is going to be as not as bad as it could be. And again, all our thoughts and prayers are with you, Nathan, and over there. You know, during this pandemic, we've seen how, you know, during the COVID break, we were away from football, and we're going to try to transition here to football here. But we had a 3.5-4 month break without football. Obviously, we've had the almost 10 month break without Slesson football. But how was your viewing of matches in terms of a Slesson perspective? How did that change? Given that there wasn't going to be any scheduled Slesson matches during the run-up to finish up these club seasons, how did your perspective and how did your viewing of these matches change from a Slesson point of view?
Well, yeah, for me, I'm always looking at a certain core group of players, you know, that I feel has a chance to make an impact with the Slesson during the off season, and they're every year in an off year for tournaments. It's basically what this year looked like, where we have several, you know, a long period of time in between matches. And unfortunately, we didn't have club football at all either. So I wasn't able to do some of the usual kind of, I guess, scouting, as you might call it, of some of the players. And then when club football did return, of course, the French League did not elect to continue their season. So I wasn't able to watch any of those players continue. But I was still able to follow the core group of players that I figured would be a part of this team when, you know, if and when football ever did return. And fortunately, I wrote an article about that months ago, in fact, and most of the names that I listed are here present in this roster. And so I was able to still kind of keep up with those group of players, with a few exceptions, again, from the French League. But yeah, this season basically looked like any non-tournament year because Euro 2020 was canceled. And so, you know, my job is just to kind of really follow the transfer market and just see, you know, how the players' futures are going to evolve in the build-up to the tournaments that are coming up. And that's kind of what I was doing a lot of, and just, you know, kind of trying to assess how the players we're preparing possibly to be called up and return to their clubs and hopefully return to form.
We're talking with Nathan Motes of Portugal.net. We are reviewing the Nations League roster that Fun Sunch called up this past week for the upcoming matches between the Slesson and Croatia on September the 5th. And then the Slesson will travel to Sweden to take on Sweden on September the 8th. You mentioned the roster, Nathan. Any surprises, either good or bad, on these call-ups? And obviously there's some injuries that have kept some key contributors to this roster with William Carvalho out, Ricard Pereira out. But any surprises, good or bad, for you on the call-up?
Absolutely. I thought that Peasy, you know, let's just take a moment to consider. Imagine it's 2010 and the Portugal football manager has left out a player that scored 30 goals for Benfica. You know, I mean, think about that, what that would be like. And now it's, you know what I'm saying? And now it's 2020 and we've done that. And the Portugal manager has left out a player that scored 30 goals and contributed 19 assists in one season. I think if you're Pisa, you have to be wondering, how many goals must I score to get the likes of Andre Gomes, with all due respect, or Sergio Oliveira? You know, I mean, these are not bad players, but that I would say me and Fernando Santos have a difference of opinion as with regard to the value of Pisa to this team. I do understand, and I've talked with many Benfica fans about this, that they feel very strongly that Pizzi is a great player in the Portuguese Liga, but that he's not necessarily Seleção quality. And I hear that, but I think the season that he's had possibly, in my opinion, again, earned him a little bit more respect than he got on this particular call up. And so I do feel for him. I do think he could have balanced out the midfield a little bit better possibly
But, you know, Fernando Santos has a certain type of player that he wants. We all know he values defensive solidarity. Maybe there was some concern there with William missing the squad. He felt maybe he did not need such an offensive-minded player. I'm not really sure what his agenda is necessarily, but I really thought Pizzi could have made it. Otherwise, I'm looking at the squad top to bottom. There's some nuance here. For example, Rafa Silva, I felt maybe could have made the squad, possibly even over, you know, we'll talk more about him in a minute, but Trincao, with all due respect to the new Barcelona player, I think at this time, being a young guy, possibly could have sat this one out and maybe played some of the friendlies. But, you know, these are kind of tit-for-tat kind of issues. Mostly I look at the squad top to bottom. It's a strong squad, good players in all positions, good experience. And I feel like we have a good chance to accomplish the objectives that this squad will undoubtedly set.
You know, the one thing that we haven't had in a while is a solid number two goalkeeper behind Rui Patricio. And I know that Anthony Lopes, coming off of a tremendous campaign with Lyon, getting far in the Champions League as well. Obviously, their regular season or their club season in the French league was cut short because of the pandemic, but they had a great run in Champions League. But he went on some sort of sabbatical, wanting to get and focus his club football for the last few years. I'm glad to see that he is back in the fold. And quite honestly, I mean, with all due respect to Beto and to José Sá and to Rui Silva, who got called up here with zero caps, and not that Anthony Lopes has a lot of caps here, he only has seven, but a solid number two behind Rui Patrice in case he ever got hurt was always something that kind of lingered in the back of my mind on a what if he gets hurt, what if something goes down. I feel a lot better having a guy like Anthony Lopes between the pipes behind Rui Patrice, and it would shock me if he got the start over Rui Patrice, but at the very least, I feel comfortable now with the two goalkeepers, the two main goalkeepers that Fernan Sanch has at his disposal.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think after the season that he's had in particular, you love to see a guy, you know, like Lopes in the team. I think that for him as well, you probably, you know, if I were him, I'd be looking at my career thinking of all the experience that he has in the Champions League and the French League and how well he's held down that starting position for Lyon for such a long time. Yeah. And I would be asking myself, how have I not, you know, secured that, that Portugal number one shirt, you know, by now. And the reason is because Rui has been so good, but both of these goalkeepers, frankly, Rui and Lopes are both underrated in my opinion. And I agree. It's good to see a stalwart, you know, backup that inspires confidence, frankly, I think, in the case of injury or something. And I think he's a great option for us going forward.
You know, let's go to the forwards, because I mean, at this point with the defense and the midfield, I think they've gone chalk, especially on the defensive side. You have Pep and José Font and Rubén Dias and the young defender Domingos Duarte, who was called up late last year as well. And then with Mario Rui and Rafael Guerreiro on the left, João Gonçalo and Nelson Smith on the right, there's not really much of a turnover there. Same goes with the midfield. The stalwarts are there, Moutinho, Bruno Fernandes, Ruben Neves, and Danilo Pereira. Up front is where, you know, in the last 12 to 18 months, just on future potential alone, and again, the word is potential, how exciting is it to see young players like João Félix last year and now Trincão this year get the call-up and kind of start the transition, but just to get their senior careers up and going based solely on the potential that they have?
Well, it inspires mixed feelings for me, only because when I look at the group that we've selected here, as forwards, we have, of course, Ronaldo, who needs no real description.
He's quite good.
He's quite good at football, it turns out. You know, scoring that left footed goal from 25 yards against Lyon in a losing effort. And you just have to think again, he has no right to score that goal, but he does it anyway. That's what Ronaldo does. But then you look at the rest of the forwards. You know, here we have Andre Silva, who fortunately had a good finish to the season with Frankfurt. I was really happy to see that. And so I feel confident that that's probably going to end up being the pairing. But then you have Gedge, who had a pretty terrible season, frankly, mostly due to injury. And then you have a group of youngsters here, João Felix, Diogo Jota, and Trincao, who between them have 7 caps. You know, from Trincao being uncapped, period. None of whom have scored goals for this Seleção in their careers. And to me, that's kind of a split concept here. We have an extreme amount of experience with Ronaldo and even Andre Silva, and then some untested players who are going up against teams, frankly, that are at the top of the footballing pedigree. And so we have to look at this in different ways, is all I'm saying. This is a good opportunity for them to prove their mettle. There's no doubt about that. But there's also some difficulty I'm having in placing a lot of confidence in what the outcome might be with players this young. However, I will say with Ronaldo getting older, I love the fact that we have different options possibly that at some point could replace him. And that's definitely been a concern in everyone's mind, I think, as Ronaldo ages. We want to know the team's going to be okay, frankly, when he moves on. And so seeing extremely talented players making moves to these big clubs like Atletico and Barcelona, I mean, this is good for the Seleção ultimately in the long run.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us are in any hurry to see Ronaldo, you know, not wearing that Seleção shirt anymore. But it's just good to me at the very least, especially for a kid like Trincão, and even you know, João Félix. He's had the attention now for a calendar year. Obviously, had a very up and down season with Atletico. And a kid like Diogo Jota, who's still just 23 years old, just to be around a guy like Ronaldo in the national team setting must be at the very least a positive experience to just get their feet wet, even if you know, Ronaldo's going to always be the one that's being on the field.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you could say that for any player on the team, whether they're a forward or not. You know, just the fact that Ronaldo's squad certainly galvanizes our spirits and gives people a sense of direction and hope, you know, regardless of how well they're playing. He has that kind of effect on his teammates. He always has, whether it's for club or country. So in that sense, yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal that he's there to mentor the youth.
You're listening to episode number 33 of the Seleção Podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. I am joined by Portugal.net's Nathan Moats as we review the roster and preview Croatia and Sweden in the Nations League group play as the Seleção was finally back on the field. And we are both, as well as you guys listening, thrilled to have Seleção football back for our viewing pleasure. Nathan, I've seen a lot on Twitter and on social media about formation with this team, given that, you know, players like Rafael Guerreiro is more of a wing back, as is João Cancelo. Nelson Smith is a wing back or can play a wing back. The formation, I don't see Fernan Santos going to 3 in the back. I know that's something that's been bandied about, going to some sort of like a 3-5-2. And you know, taking advantage of the skills that they're playing you know, left and right back, but we'll just call them our wing backs have. But do you see it? Maybe not in this. I don't see it happening in these two first matches. But can you see Fernan Santos going away from what he's done before and using the talent in a different way? Hopefully that people are hoping for.
I can't see him doing it without Ricardo Pereira in this lineup. You know, and if he's going to start experimenting there, he's going to want a right back with that type of quality. You know, and so with Ricardo recovering from ACL injury, he's the one player that for Leicester City was able to hone those instincts as a 3-5-2 type wingback. And I think that he would be a good complement to Rafael Guerrero on the left if Santos were to try to experiment with that formation. But since he's out, I really don't see that happening. That said, this squad does potentially have the right makeup of players to implement that type of tactical setup. I just, you know, knowing Santos, I just don't see him going with that experimental route this time. I think some of the other configurations he's going to attempt in midfield may surprise us a little bit. We'll see what happens with that, of course. But I don't see him doing the 3-5-2 this time around. That said, if we struggle for goals or for some balance in this squad, I think to his credit, you know, we all get a little frustrated with Fernando Santos sometimes for the way he has his own favorite formations. But he's been willing to try different strategies in the past, and I'm confident he'll find the right one, whatever that is.
Yeah, just I mean, given the fact that he only has. And I'm looking at the roster here, looking at the midfield, two certified, defensive mids, or at least I should say two defensive mids with a lot of Slesson, experience with Huba Neves and Daniel Pereira. He's obviously been a fan of going with the two defensive mids. That would leave some firepower on the bench, obviously, and obviously fans are tired of seeing firepower not being used. Obviously you got to credit your opponent as well on taming the firepower whenever it gets on the field. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, I think, like you said, matchups are gonna be what dictates that. And I would say when the matches in October come, I think how many points that they have after two matches may dictate call-ups and formations going forward. So it could be on a situational basis, but I think we are both in agreement that there's plenty to choose from if Nansanch wants to go in with an offensive mindset.
Yeah, and with the double pivot too, as we've been mentioning. So I've been openly critical of that formation in the past, and I admit that it's not my favorite formation. But we have to remember the Seleção did operate this the double pivot. That's the two defensive midfielder base in midfield. They did operate that formation to perfection against the Netherlands in the Nations League final. So it is possible that Santos could want that again, in particular against an opponent like France in the coming matches, who will put this squad under enormous pressure defensively. And so there is that to think about as well. I think this squad is adaptable. I don't think we have to go with one base formation. There's alterations we can make, subtle movements of personnel that can give us some different capabilities. I think Santos is going to do something like that, but I think we're going to see kind of different combinations. The 4-4-2 with the double pivot, the 4-4-2 and something like a 4-1-3-2 possibly, just a straight diamond 4-4-2, and maybe even the 4-3-3 depending on again the opponent and how we're doing in competition.
You know, you mentioned France. They are the opponent, along with Sweden, rematch with Sweden in October. These first two matches against Croatia to open up group play, and then traveling to Sweden following the first match. You have France waiting for you in match three. They also have them in match five, I believe, of the six matches. Four-team group this go around in Nations League. It was a three-team group with the inaugural Nations League in 2018. I think the group group play in 2018, the final in 2019. Still, only one team gets out of this group and heads into the semifinals of this tournament. How crucial is it for the Seleção to try to max out these two matches before that vital third match and that first match against France?
It's pretty important. Frankly, France are in great form, and they haven't missed a beat since the 2018 World Cup. And I think they're going to be a real handful for us. I know a lot of people will probably try to reference our defeating them on their own home soil in 2016. But I think that will only inspire the French further to defeat us. We have to think about the psychological edge possibly being given back to them in this match. So I think that we have two good opportunities here against Croatia and Sweden. And here's why I think that. So in Croatia's case, for whatever reason, their two star midfielders, the captain and vice captain, Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic, are both not in this squad at the time. Now, they still have some real talent in midfield, but they've got some young forwards, got some young defenders. And honestly, if I'm Fernand Santos, I'm looking at that squad and I'm thinking that that's a good matchup for a team with an experienced player like Ronaldo, a savvy midfield full of Premier League talent, with a real firecracker like Renato Sanchez coming off the bench, possibly. I like us against Croatia in that matchup in Porto, frankly. And then going against Sweden, historically, we fared pretty well against the Swedes. The last time we played them in this stadium, well, you know what happened. Ronaldo happened. So I think that I like us in that matchup as well. I think we can take 6 points there, frankly. And then we're looking good against the French. And no matter what happens, you know, we go into the return fixtures and we have at least an opportunity, you know, to make it competitive to get that top spot. So that's how I see things happening at this point.
Yeah, the match in October against France will be in France. The match in November will be in Portugal. Obviously, there every match in the group play is important here. If the Slesson wants to defend their Nations League title, this group is tough. You have the defending world champs in France. You have the runners up in Croatia. A long history with Sweden. Does the Slesson have? If you look at the tournament next summer, again, France is there. Germany is there. We have not fared well with the exception of one match against France. Obviously, that beautiful summer in 2016. And then Germany is always given the Slesson problems. The Slesson has their work cut out for them these next two summers. With that said, how do you think Portugal is currently set up to take on these huge tasks of just getting out of group play in Nations League and in Europe, European competition next summer?
Well, since Euro 2016, I think a lot's changed psychologically for this team, for this nation as a force in the sport of football. You know, I think that these difficult groups that we're facing, particularly in the Nations League, really I look at them as helping us to even sharpen further the psychological edge that we have heading into an even more difficult group task at Euro 2020 next summer. So I really savor the opportunity to play difficult opponents like Croatia and especially France, given that they'll be in the same group with us next summer. I think that this squad and the emergent players that we have and the experienced manager that we have, this is peak Seleção. You know, I think a lot of people, rightly so, look back with nostalgia on the golden generation, but we have the best player in our history, you know, playing at this time. He's still, even at age 35, is getting the business done. We have great young players. We have talented midfield maestros, and we have the right pieces to do the job. Now, whether they will or not, you know, whether it's going to end up like the World Cup in 2018 or whether it's going to end up like Euro 2016, you know, there's so much chance, there's so much random occurrence in football. It's just impossible to say, but I love the place that we're at in our history as a footballing nation. And I look forward to the challenge, frankly, of duking out with the world heavyweights.
Yeah, France currently ranked second in the world, Croatia ranked sixth in the world, Portugal at 7, and then Sweden is tied with Chile at 17. And then, of course, next summer you have the last two World Cup champions and the current European champions. No big deal. I say bring it too, Nathan. I think you test yourself against the best. Hell, let's throw that friendly against Spain coming up in the next month or so as well, in preparation for the October matches for the Nations League as well. I say if you want to, I mean, to quote the great Ric Flair, to be the man, woo, you've got to beat the man. So
well
and currently right now in Europe, even though I mean in the in the European competition, I mean, Portugal is the man. You know, whether people like it or not, and whether we won ugly or not, we have that trophy in our trophy case to say that we're the man. And you know, the European champion and the world champion will collide in October, and then in November, and we'll do it again next summer, and we'll see who's left standing at the end there. But exciting times for sure for the Seleção. We are on episode number 33 of the Seleção podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. Great to be joined again by Nathan Motes of Portugal.net. Nathan, of course, not only can you catch him on Portugal.net, but he has put his name in another soccer football book about Portuguese soccer. Obviously, the 13th chapter with him and Tom Kundert and Simon Curtis is a great read. But upcoming here in the next month or so, the Iberian Chronicles. Nathan, you took part in that as well. Our previous guest in the last episode, Alex Gonçalves, also had part in that book. Tell me how you got involved with that and your role and your part in the upcoming book.
Yeah, that's a great project by the Football Chronicle founder, Karan Tejwani, who I really admire for trying to put together the type of football literature that avoids kind of the soap opera, you know, feel that's coming out of the world of journalism right now, and including football journalism, and instead investing a great deal of effort in writing very thoughtful articles for true fans, sincere fans, not just casual perusers of the game, but those who seriously want to invest a great deal of thought in understanding the game, its tactics, its history, its great players. And so out of that desire came this idea about putting into print a compendium of stories on the Iberian nation entitled Iberia Chronicles. And in that, there's 10 stories from each nation, Spain and Portugal. I was honored to write about the Portuguese Golden Generation and kind of start off the section of the book on Portugal there. And it was a great project. I want to be a part of any effort that speaks to the prestige of Portuguese football, in particular, uncovering the past and where we came from and how difficult it was to establish the merit of our football in a world dominated by, you know, the Brazils and the Germanies and England for whatever reason, you know, and all these other nations. You know, and I think that story needs to be told. It's an exciting story, not just for people who care about Portugal. I think it would interest any football fan. It's something I'm passionate about, and I think Portugal deserves it, frankly, given what they've achieved in the sport. So for me, it was a labor of love, as all my labors are in writing about Portuguese football. I enjoyed every minute of it, and I hope others do too.
And that book, Iberia Chronicles, will be available on October the 5th. You can order it on sites like Amazon and through Pitch Publishing as well in the UK. All these folks ready to see your reading and read your reading and read your writing, I should say, Nathan. And if you guys haven't picked up the 13th chapter yet, I've read it, and it's just nice to get to read back. And obviously 2016 is where I found the most enjoyable reading, but getting to know the 66 team as someone who, again, I'm 39 years old. I'll be 40 in December. Obviously, was not around to watch Eusebio play and the greats there. But you guys did such a great job with that book, and I hope you guys find success with the Iberia Chronicles as well, Nathan.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're trying to do a service, you know, for people who have a love for the game and for the Portuguese game, which we felt has been neglected. And we thought there would be many others who would want to take us up on the offer of kind of joining us in these discussions about how great it is to watch Portuguese football and the history unfold and see where it goes. You know, that's really what we're trying to do, is just document the record of this journey. Portugal is a voyaging nation, by heritage. And we see kind of the parallels in the sport of football as well. And so we're happy that others want to be a part of, you know, reading that and studying that and being proud of that with us.
Nathan, before we let you go, we had some questions and some comments in preparation for our interview today. I reached out to the folks on Twitter, and they've sent us in some of their comments and some of their questions, even as far back as the day of the Slesson roster announcement. Do you want to go? Obviously, I know the answer to this. Do you want to go through some of these since I told you it was going to happen anyway?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty, here we go. Let's go to India. First of all, Mohammed Farouk, his comment on the roster, he thought it was a superb selection. He expected either Netu or Pudence, both Wolves fans, or both Wolves players. I think this guy is a Wolves fan, if I'm not mistaken. But he obviously thinks that William Carvalho is recovering, and we both know that to be true. The best squad, my captain, Cristiano Ronaldo. Any thought on either Pedro Neto or Daniel Pudence not making it this go around?
I think you can make the case that both of those players, you know, had a shout based on their, in particular, their end of season form. You know, I just look at them as both of them kind of untried, untested options. Fernando Santos looking to get some really youthful players in this squad, and maybe just saw the upside with Trincao, and of course Felix is being a little bit more obvious at this point. But I think we'll see both of those players in coming iterations of the Seleção. That's my opinion.
And I believe Daniel Pudence got engaged, either or shared that he got engaged the day that he did not get selected. So I guess, you know, glass half full. So congrats.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, congrats
awesome.
To him. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I got, looks like he asked her out or asked her to marry him on a nice yacht. So there's worse things, I guess, right?
He's doing fine.
Simba Walker says he has no issue with the roster. But he is hoping that Fernand Sanch opts for the more attractive 3-5-2. Center back depth is better than recent years. Guerreiro and Cancelo are best at wing back. And we have Bernardo and Bruno Fernandes who can boss the midfield. Let's do that. Obviously, we talked about that a little bit, but the option is there, Nathan. And it's just it'll be interesting to see if Fernand Sanch does that or not. But I think both of us are of the opinion that maybe this go around, he may not.
Yeah, and I would add, I'm looking at the squad. I mean, we have four center backs in the squad. You know, I can definitely see how, you know, that to me speaks to there being a two center back starting formation. I've never seen Fernando Santos waver from a four man defense. So I don't see that happening this time. However, when Ricardo returns, I wonder if there will be some unexpected shuffling. Just because of the capabilities that he brings in a 3-5-2.
Okay, we now go to Giuseppe Alberto. He is from the New England area in the east coast of the United States, and he says that he thinks the selection of the team was pretty spot on and shows that we are taking these games very serious. However, former guest Jimmy Enge from Southern California, he says it's 2020 and we're still calling up Andre Gomes, thinking we might see something different. So there's two different ways of looking at the roster. Obviously, Jimmy not, you know, crapping on the entire roster, just kind of wondering what the thought process of what haven't we seen from Andre Gomes yet?
It's a really good question, and it's a fair critique of this squad, frankly. I'm struggling a bit with it myself. All due respect to the Everton midfielder. He does have some experience there, you know, 29 caps under his belt. So does Peasy. But, you know, I think he seems to be the type of guy who has something, you know, maybe call it unspoken or transcendent quality, if you will, about his play that Santos really likes. Maybe it's just the way that he integrates with the other players around him. It's difficult to say. I agree, though. Every time I've watched him for the Seleção or even for his club side, I've never been awe-inspired by his play. He's a decent player. maybe a good bench option, but I don't fully understand that either. So great question.
You know, I mean, he could be one of those guys as maybe he's just a good locker room guy who has the, he's been in the fold for a number of years, obviously was part of the 2016 European Championship team, but I mean, he could be a guy, especially with some injuries that, and some young players around too that are coming up the way, just a veteran influence that Nunsunch can kind of lean on, not so much someone who's going to be, you know, called upon to be not to lean on him on the field, but to be more of a lean on guy off the field, the locker room guy. We'll see. I would be shocked if he got any type of impactful playing time. We'll say that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, looking at the midfield, we're going to see Bruno. We're going to see Bernardo 100%, those two. From there, it's going to be one or both of Ruben Neves and Danilo. And if it's just one of those two players, then, and I don't know, I can see maybe João Moutinho possibly taking that last spot. But that's just my premonition at this stage.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, maybe, you know, just our opinion here, that, you know, of the seven midfield options that Nunsunch has gone with, Sergio Oliveira and Andre Gomes are probably sitting 6 and 7. I think we're both in agreement on that. From one of 11 million translated in Portuguese, he or she writes, was it a good thing for the Seleção to see Euro 2020 being postponed to next year?
Ooh, wow. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think I'm going to say yes. I think that there were a number of attacking players in particular that struggled this season, either to adapt to new clubs or just to continue their progress from the season prior. I'll mention, you know, again, not to try to direct more attacks his way, but Gonçalo Guedes just had a really difficult season for Valencia. In spite of being the goal scorer at in the final against the Netherlands in 2019, the Nations League final. We did have a good season from Andre Silva and, of course, Ronaldo. But other than that, the others in this cast have struggled a bit. And then you look at some of the options even that didn't make this call-up. You have Bruma. You have Gonçalo Paciência. So there's no one really inspiring there. I think it wouldn't be a bad thing necessarily to give these players another season to improve. And then you factor in the injuries. You know, William recovered from a back injury and frankly didn't factor too much into Real Betis's plans when he returned. So I think he's got another season to set that right. Ricardo Pereira, of course, we've talked about him being injured. He's a talented player. And I really think we would have missed him if we would have had to play the Euros this summer. So I do think it's good that we were able to wait on him. And then, you know, it gives another year for an emerging player to kind of cement themselves, you know, maybe in the squad, maybe another defender. You know, we have Domingos Duarte. Maybe we could use another one possibly for the future, you know, with both Pep and Jose Font, the wrong side of 35. And that's not a bad thing either. So I think all things considered, I'm going to say it's positive.
Okay. All right. I think it's positive too, with the one exception that it's Ronaldo's 1 year older. And I know he is a physical specimen, but, you know, Father Time is undefeated. And at some point you have to think that, you know, these long European seasons, these club seasons that, you know, he is normally a part of, will take its toll, but the guy does seem to have something. Some sort of fountain of youth, some sort of elixir that he is that he continues to take to stay as fit and on top of his game as he possibly can. But I guess for me, it's like you're almost waiting for that shoe to kind of slowly fall off. But luckily, and we'll knock on this wood here, and I'm not even sure if that is wood. It's not exactly the most expensive desk in the world, but we're hoping that that could be prolonged as long as possible.
Yeah, for sure. It's scary thinking about it, but, you know, whether he was 35 or 36, you know, at this tournament, I think the cast we have around him is really, these are good players. And I think that for a guy like Ronaldo, he's going to eat up, you know, the service and the passing and the opportunities he's given. with these talented players around him. And I'm honestly, you know, all due respect to his age, I think Ronaldo's going to be just fine. It's really the rest of them that I hope are going to step up their game as usual.
Nelson Hudrigues, he asked a question that we've kind of already addressed. Thoughts on PZ being left out of this Slesson roster? I am obviously on paper, and you know, on paper the stats would get him on that or should get him on the roster. I would say especially over Andre Gomes and Sergio Oliveira. But he's not a very inspiring footballer. I think he doesn't really, I don't know if he makes your team better. How about that?
Yeah, I hear that. And I definitely will agree that having watched him play for Portugal, he has 17 caps at this point. He's scored 3 goals. I don't ever remember walking away thinking that PZ was ever a game changer.
Or that he needed to be run out there again, right?
Yeah, and I can agree with that perspective for sure. I just, you know, when I look at the options potentially that excluded him from the squad and Gomes and Sergio Oliveira, I just, that's what makes it more difficult to reconcile.
Finally, we have a question from Anthony Souza. Anthony asks, if we are to play in a diamond with 2 up front, and that would obviously be Ronaldo and whoever, who do you think would be his best partner right now on the roster as constituted?
Let's see. On form, I would probably have to go with Andre Silva, actually, given his goal-scoring record. And the two of them have worked together pretty well in the past as well. I'll add that. Andre Silva is second on this list in the forwards category in terms of overall caps, also in goals scored. Gonçalo Guedes is also another option. I very much have wanted to see Diogo Jota play alongside Ronaldo, though. And I will concede that Jota did have, you know, perhaps not his best season, especially towards the end, when really I think Pedro Neto kind of overtook him a little bit. But I still would like to see Diogo Jota. But for me, at this time, I say Ronaldo and Andre Silva.
Well, those were your questions, guys. We appreciate you guys always conversing with us and contacting us and exchanging your ideas on Twitter, at SlessOnPod. Always a pleasure to talk to everyone out there, and always a pleasure to have you on, Nathan. Again, you know, I didn't even throw out your Twitter once. My goodness. You can follow Nathan Motes on Twitter, at Nathan Motes. That's NathanMotz. Read all his articles on Portugal.net. And of course, pick up not only the 13th chapter, but the Iberia Chronicles, which comes out on October the 5th. Again, Amazon, Hive. We'll put links up on our social media as well. And, you know, make sure that when you interact with Nathan, let him know what a great job he did on this last episode and all the episodes he's been on now. A returning guest, one of our favorites, and we can't thank you enough for coming on.
Yeah, I just want to say to everyone too, you know, it's been, you know, one of the better things in my life just to enjoy the opportunity to write on this compelling subject and on the history of Portuguese football. I enjoy the conversations on Twitter. I enjoy the passion and really the respect amongst supporters. And I just, you know, welcome all your interactions. Thank you for reading. And I hope to see some of you out there maybe at the tournament next summer.
Ooh, Nathan, real quick. This should go up on the 31st, which means if not the 1st on Tuesday, so Monday, Tuesday. By Tuesday, we'll know exactly what the official threads of the Slesson will be this coming weekend.
Nice.
I have not seen a lot of positive.
Yeah, not
a lot of positive response. I was not a fan of the in 2016. I was not an initial fan of that teal look, but it really grew on me, and I learned to love it. I'm huge on the polo, the red polo. I dislike immensely the whatever lightning bolt is on the side of said polo, but yeah. I am not a, I'm, People are really crapping on the away jersey with the three stripes and the and bringing back that teal. I kind of dig it. What are your thoughts on the proposed jerseys that are the leaks that are out there?
Oh God, you know, it's it's one of those things. In the end, I keep telling myself, man, it doesn't matter if they get out there and win. Who cares what they're wearing? But at the same time, you always want them to look stylish. I'm a big fan of the real bold colors. You know, I like the real simple designs, not the real artsy kind of stuff. This to me looked a bit like an overreach possibly, but like I said, I'll reserve judgment and see how it looks. And, you know, if they get out there and light it up, I don't care, man. I'll love the job. I'll buy all of them. If they go out there and so, you know, who cares?
and if they crap the bed, that money is safe in your pocket, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it works.
Nathan, all the best to you, man. Stay safe. And I hope we talk to you soon and enjoy the return of our beloved Slesson.
Thanks so much. Always nice to join you.
And a big thank you once again to Nathan Motes of Portugal.net for joining us on episode 33 of the Slesson podcast as we talk about the return of the Slesson to the international stage as two matches in the Nations League coming up September the 5th and September the 8th this week. The next week or so, and just excited to be talking Slesson football again. Did not put out his Twitter enough during that interview, so that is my mistake. Please follow Nathan on Twitter, at Nathan Motes. That's NathanMotz. And make sure you order your copy of Iberia Chronicles. I said Iberian, I think, at the first time, but it is Iberia Chronicles. The story of Spanish and Portuguese football, that coming out in early October. Go to Amazon, go to Hive, and put your order in now and support a great ambassador of Portuguese football. Again, it amazes me with Nathan as someone who, you know, born in the States, but with, you know, I was born in the States, but Nathan has like no ties whatsoever, no Portuguese lineage, no family members, no nothing. And you can hear in the way he speaks about this Slesson, what kind of passion he has for this national team. And it's always a joy to have him on the program, and I can't wait to have him back on. And I hope that the book is a smashing success for him and everybody involved. Really quickly, before we get out of here, something I forgot to mention in the first part of the episode was the records of this Slesson against their two opponents coming up on September the 5th and September the 8th. First off, Croatia. The Slesson has never lost to Croatia. They have five official matches, four wins, one draw. Of course, the most recent win was the win in extra time against Croatia in Euro 2016, where Ricard Quaresma scored that goal in extra time to move the Slesson forward in that tournament. The most recent match was an international friendly, on September the 6th of 2018, a 1-1 draw there, but a 4-win, 1-draw, 0-loss record for the Slesson against Croatia. As for Sweden, the record is not great overall. 5 wins, 6 draws, and 7 losses. However, 6 of those losses came from 1955 to 1984. And since that loss in 1984, the Slesson has gone with 4 wins, 5 draws, and only 1 loss. That 1 loss, an international friendly as well, on March the 28th of 2017. Their last victory against Sweden was in Sweden, which was the absolute masterclass that Cristiano Ronaldo and Zlatan Ibrahimovic put on, a brace for Zlatan, but a world class hat trick that put the Slesson into the 2014 World Cup. But very good recent success against both of these nations, and here's hoping for a continued success against both those nations in the next week or so. That will do it for episode 33 of the Slesson podcast. Again, I just cannot thank you guys enough for the support during this this COVID break of the show. We reached out and kind of branched out a little bit. Had some great success and great response from you guys in that venture. But the Sled Song is our bread and butter, and this is why we started this podcast, and this is why we continue to put episode after episode out. And we are so thrilled that we get to talk and watch Sled Song football again. Remember all of our social media and our website, SledSongPod.com, at SledSongPod on Twitter and on Instagram, Facebook.com/SledSongPod. SledSongPod@gmail.com. Remember to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys subscribe or listen to your podcast. Just go ahead and subscribe to us there. And we just cannot thank you guys anymore. But we certainly will try for all the support you guys give us every single episode. My name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode 33 of the Sled Song Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. Seleção, welcome back, and Força Portugal!